Welcome back to Unexpected Adventures in North Alabama, part of the Destination Marketing Podcast Network. Our guest today is Sarah Belanger, one of the authors of North Alabama Beer, An Intoxicating History, and I cannot wait to talk to you about your book and all the fascinating history you can find in it. Welcome to the show, Sarah.
Thank you so much.
Well, before we jump in, will you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and your background?
So I am a freelance writer and photographer in North Alabama. I have a background in food photography. So when the craft beer industry started growing in Huntsville, I was covering it for the Visitors Bureau and several local magazines. And through that experience, I was able to write North Alabama Beer, An Intoxicating History with my research partner and copy editor, Camera Bowling Davis.
Okay. That is really cool. So a food photographer, that sounds like an amazing job, especially if you get to taste the things that you've taken pictures of, correct?
It is. Yeah, you do. I eat a lot of cold food because, you know, it takes forever. And my husband can't stand going out to eat with me because I can't not photograph things. But other than marital problems that it has caused at dinner, it's good.
That's so funny. I know whenever I get a really pretty plate of something, I'm always like, okay, hold on, everyone. I got to take a picture of it. And yeah, there are people in my life who are annoyed as well. But you know what? It's fine. They still got to eat.
Exactly. It might be cold, but that's fine. You don't need to eat hot food all the time.
Totally fine. Well, let's jump right in. What inspired you to write this book?
So I've always been a beer enjoyer. When I was younger, that was sort of my go-to. When we would go out to the club or a bar or something, I would always get a beer. Of course, I would get cheap, not great beer, but I enjoyed it anyways. And so I was very unaware of the restrictions that Alabama had on the craft beer industry when I was in my 20s. And then I ended up having a friend invite me to when they had free the hops. So when they had passed the gourmet beer bill and they had the alcohol limit had increased from 6% to 13.9%. Mm-hmm. I ended up going out with him to Mason's Bar and there like to have high gravity beer. And that was the first time I'd really tasted good beer. And so at that point, I just became just naturally interested in it. And I had a very good friend in Birmingham who I'd worked with. I used to work with Oxmoor House, which was the cookbook division of Southern Living. And mm-hmm. so she still worked there. And so we would go craft beer popping. And so we would get flights and we would taste things. And I started learning about all the different types of beers. And because I was a photographer, I was covering it for the Visitors Bureau. Mm-hmm. And through that, I ended up getting connected with Arcadia Press, who mm-hmm. published history books about beer, local history books about a wide range of subjects. But beer was one of those subjects.
Yeah.
But I'd been writing about it since, I guess, 2011 when they contacted me in 2016.
So a student of beer. I mean, there's a lot worse things to be a student of. I like that.
It's interesting. Yeah.
It's like you're out studying the beer. So
it's
so
interesting
cool.
to see it from after enjoying the craft beer, to look at it from a historical perspective was a really interesting experience. So,
yeah. Well, let's talk about that history of beer because you mentioned this in your book. Give us a brief overview of the history of beer, especially in North Alabama.
So, in the really early days, there's a lot of information about kind of ancient people drinking beer. And so, mm-hmm. it is believed that the indigenous people of Alabama did have a fermented drink, beer-like drink. But what we think of as beer, which is hops and grains, that most likely came through with the European immigrants. And mm-hmm. so there is evidence, part of the reason why the Mayflower ended up in Massachusetts as opposed to Virginia was because they had beer on the ship to sustain them for getting to the new world, and they were getting low. So they realized they weren't going to be able to make it back with enough beer. So they just dropped them off, the pilgrims off, as fast as they could and headed back to Europe. And they ended up having a pretty bleak winter because they were in Massachusetts as opposed to Virginia. Yeah. So it was definitely considered back in the day a life-sustaining beverage that people just drank every day. It was a lower... it was a lower alcohol level, mm-hmm. so it wasn't what we think of today, but still babies would drink beer. Everyone would drink beer.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And it was actually considered better than water because water could become brackish, but mm-hmm. because the boiling process boiled out the bacteria, then beer was actually considered a lot more sanitary and healthy, and you were less likely to get sick from drinking it.
I wish I had known this excuse when I was in college. I mean, seriously, that would have really come in handy.
Like, it's anyway, just a health sorry, drink. It's healthy. So Alabama was the same. There's a lot of evidence of people homebrewing. Mm-hmm. They would have made it in the family. They would have also made it with local ingredients. So they had to change their European recipes to fit mm-hmm. local plants. There is a lot of evidence that they had hop farms, which is impressive because hops need a pretty cold winter. Mm-hmm. So they figured out how to grow hops in order to make their beer. There were some laws concerning hard liquor in Alabama, but for the most part, beer was kind of like their go-to. Mm-hmm. The first, I guess, commercial brewery that we know of at this point, there a new one could come. That's how history works, is it's constantly changing. But the first one was in Huntsville in 1819, before Alabama was even a state. There was Huntsville Brewery, which was created by the Badland brothers. And so there's a lot of evidence of different breweries all through the 1800s. And then for Alabama, the first temperance society started in Tuscaloosa in 1828, so not long after the commercial brewery. And so there was a push pretty early on to limit alcohol at the very least. So Alabama had a lot of saloons, which were a problem. And so they had a lot of problems with drunkenness. Decatur, in fact, had a street. It was an alley between, I believe, Bank Street and Church Street that they called Dead Man's Alley because so many people.
It was pretty wild down there, yeah.
Yeah, Decatur was a wild place. Yes. You guys had a lot going on. So, and so there was a big push for prohibition, especially in the early 1900s. They had Alabama themselves had two bouts of prohibition mm-hmm. As a state. The first one was in, I think, 1909, which lasted a couple of years, but the state needed money that they were getting mm-hmm. from the alcohol sales. So they ended up going back to having alcohol. They did local option, and then it started again in 1915. Mm-hmm. And then they needed money again. So they were like, okay, maybe this isn't working out for us. But in 1920, they ended up having federal prohibition, ended up starting. So that was how we got to prohibition.
Gotcha. So how long did that prohibition last then?
So the prohibition in, I believe it was 13 years. Okay. Like it ended up from 13 years, 1920 to 1933, the federal prohibition happened, and it created a lot of interesting things. We got cocktails out of prohibition, NASCAR came out of prohibition, the mob became very established because of prohibition. So there were some interesting things that ended up good and bad that came out of it.
Well, I know that there's probably some great stories in the book about how people got their fix during Prohibition. Do you have a favorite story to tell?
I have two that I really Like, one is the name bootlegger came mm-hmm. because men would wear very tall boots and you would walk up to them on a street and they were you would ask them for a swig and they'd pull out a flask, and for a fee you could drink out of their flask, which they would then hide back in their boot, hence the name bootlegger. Okay. Also, blind pigs were really popular. So it's sort of the southern version of speakeasies. Were called blind pigs or blind tigers. And the way it worked is you would pay to see some interesting things, such as a blind pig, which often was just a pig with, like, a taxidermied pig with a blindfold on it, or a tiger with a blindfold on it. And so as your free gift, you would get alcohol. So you would pay to see the pig, but then you would, you know, get a little swig of alcohol, because if it was free, it was legal. So
this is very interesting. And I'm kind of wondering, like, who thought of this idea as, you know, we'll show you a blind pig or a blind tiger. And I'm sorry, I'm feeling a little bit tickled by this.
It was never ending. Even they said with Redstone Arsenal, they used a lot of industrial alcohol that you could drink. Yeah. But it was, of course, for industrial purposes.
Of course.
And right. So they had a big problem with employees smuggling it off from the arsenal. Mm-hmm. And so they started doing car checks. And so what people did is they would fill their radiators with alcohol to smuggle it out. And so the way they combated that is they would just make the car checks take longer and see which cars started steaming, so they would know which ones had alcohol in the radiator.
That is absolutely wild. I mean, these stories are fantastic.
People will drink. That's the thing that came out of Prohibition, is it didn't really stop people from drinking. It just stopped them from drinking legally.
So. Right. And apparently it made people it brought out their creativity.
It did. Absolutely. People learned to be beer makers pretty fast.
That's absolutely wild. I love it. So what is your favorite part of the North Alabama beer history to write about, other than those stories, of course, because those are pure gold?
There was one really wild story that happened in Huntsville that I just got obsessed with researching. Mm-hmm. And there was so much that I researched, and it's, you know, I obviously couldn't fit it all. It's a whole book in itself. But there was a judge, Judge Lawler, mm-hmm. who was kind of known as a teetotaler. And this was during one of Alabama's prohibitions. So alcohol was not, it was in 1920, but alcohol was not legal in Alabama. And so the chief of police was, his name was Overton. Overton was using the Huntsville police force to transport moonshine and whiskey. Wow. And so he had quite a little game going, but he had political aspirations as well. So he decided to run against Judge Lawler. And it was a terrible back and forth between the two of them, where they were both hiding illegal liquor in each other's barns and then calling the police. And they were like, all this stuff was happening between them. But finally, Judge Lawler won, which later ended up finding out that he won by cheating. But shortly afterwards, so Overton was worried that he wouldn't be able to run his liquor quite the same way because he'd made an adversary with Judge Lawler. And mm-hmm. so he ended up killing Judge Lawler.
Oh, wow.
And so there was a really shocking case. It was the biggest case of that, you know, era, was in Huntsville, Alabama. And it, everyone across the nation knew about the Judge Lawler case and everything. And so Overton ended up missing. And they were searching for him, and they couldn't figure out what was happening, why Lawler had been murdered. But then as they were doing research, they ended up finding out this massive corruption of smuggling like liquor from Tennessee through Alabama, through the waterways and everything. And they ended up catching Overton, but in the course of it, the sheriff committed suicide, a prominent lawyer committed suicide. Several people ended up just quitting really abruptly because so much corruption had happened in the course of it. And then in the end, Lawler was convicted. It seemed like that was the end of it. But then he escaped prison with several other convicts and was shot, which everyone felt like it was an assassination because there was a lot of reason he got out of prison pretty easily. So it was just a completely insane story. That being said, so many stories from Prohibition were absolutely insane. Like, it was definitely the Wild West when it came to Prohibition.
That is crazy. You're right. That does sound like a book or a movie. A movie. That would be great.
Yeah, it was wild. Yeah.
That would be a on your edge of your seat movie right there.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Please, someone make it. I definitely want to see it. Yes.
You could do the screenplay for it. How about
I know.
That?
That's going to be my next project, definitely.
We need to find a backer. Like, we got to get this project
this is,
going.
Yeah.
Yep. This is it. This is it. Well, let's jump to the current day. Can you tell us about the craft beer, microbrewing, and the modern day beer making in North Alabama?
Yeah, so I will say, just to go back a few years, so Alabama back in the early 2000s had one of the strictest beer manufacturing and craft beer restrictions in the country. And so you couldn't have alcohol over 6%. You couldn't manufacture alcohol and serve it in your own building. There was a lot of restrictions. So they didn't have a lot of craft beer until 1992. They had the Brewpub Act, which it was so restrictive that businesses couldn't sustain themselves. So there were several places that started and failed. And then in 2004, Danner Klein was a college student and ended up going to Texas and tasted beer, craft beer. And he was like, oh my gosh, this is so good. And so he went back and tried to get the same stuff in Alabama. And they were like, oh, yeah, no, we can't get that here. And so he started doing research and ended up realizing that it was because Alabama's laws were so restrictive. So they ended up creating the Free the Hops movement, or he ended up creating, he was one of the co-founders of it. And they worked diligently for years to get the laws changed so that they could actually start having a craft beer industry. So that didn't really start. Alabama's first North Alabama's first brewery was Old Town Brewing, mm-hmm. which started in 2004, and it was good, but they still had to follow a lot of restrictions. And that was the only one for quite a while. Mm-hmm. Now it's crazy how many craft breweries there are. I looked on Wikipedia this morning, and there's 45 craft breweries, or over 40 craft breweries in Alabama, and I'm sure more every day. Wow. So it's crazy to see how it's changed in the last, even 5 years, but 10 years ago, it is completely different. Yeah.
I mean, once they started popping up, they just started popping up.
And yeah.
Doesn't Huntsville have like the largest amount of craft breweries like per capita of any city in Alabama? Is that true still?
I feel like that is true. Birmingham kind of was giving us a run for our money, but yeah. I do think that Huntsville does have the most. And I think the main thing that came out of, obviously the laws changing was huge, but also I think people's sentiment about beer and craft beer really mm-hmm. changed. Prior to the Free the Hops movement, it was really considered blue collar, not very big, just something that you drink, but not something you could enjoy necessarily. Right. Yeah. And so I think that has definitely changed with all the different beers that are here in the breweries and the styles, and people are experimenting. And I think people that prior to that moment never thought they would, like, they thought, I don't like beer. They realized they'd never had beer they liked.
Right.
And then once the craft beer, they'd never have good beer. Exactly. So it changed once, Free the Hops kind of re-educated people.
Yeah, that is so cool. Yeah, like 7 or 8 years ago, we started the North Alabama Craft Beer Trail. And because we realized there were so many in North Alabama, there were so many in Huntsville. And so we, put together this trail. And of course, now it includes Back 40 Beer Company out of Gadsden, Goat Island in Coleman, Yellowhammer in Huntsville, Main Channel, and then Bowler Hat Brewing. And so what do you think are some of the unique aspects of some of those breweries that are on our trail?
It's the first thing is it's incredible that there's even a trail. It's incredible that we have so many places that we can have a whole trail. It's so exciting to see that change. And I love the different options on that, because every brewery is really different and every brewery specializes in a different type of beer.
Right.
The Yellowhammer, it's almost like the Wonka chocolate factory of beer. Like, it's so big now and there's so many things. It's incredible for me to see it, because I was at one of their very first places, which was just this tiny, almost hole in the wall. And now they just have this huge complex. They have lounges. They bring in music. They have tons of events. And if you really don't like any type of beer, they have different types of drinks that you can also get. And they do cocktails. They have a great pizza place there. So there's just so many things there that it's big, and there's lots of seating areas, and their beer is, I mean, all of them, the beer is really good, but I think their Belgium White is still their flagship beer, which is like crazy, because I think it was sort of what they started with. So
their T-minus is my favorite, and that's actually the very first craft beer that I ever tried. And I think it was at an event that you talked about, the visitor center had put on. I think that's where we met.
That's crazy.
And so I was like, okay, let me try this. And I thought, wow, okay. So this is not, we all have the cheap beer that we, cut our teeth on.
Grew up
21 year olds.
Yeah,
21,
exactly.
We were all 21.
Exactly.
But then it's like you said, it really changed people. It changed my perspective, because I thought, wow, this is tasty. Like,
it's,
I could see myself, enjoying it with a meal, and not just, but yeah. And I love how the breweries, have that nod to like local culture and heritage, because, the T-minus, Rocket City,
of course,
and some of their proceeds go to Space Camp, and so those are, I love stuff like that. That's really.
And that was one of the things that with the beer industry, the craft beer industry, they all do charitable works. They all are really invested on making the community better. They're all working towards that. And to go back to your other question, I love that Bowler Hat is just a lot more intimate, but they have great kind of malty stout beers. And again, it's like the vibe of it is more Prohibition Bowler Hat, Prohibition era. And it's a little more intimate, but they also have food and it's a great location. Main Channel is amazing because you've got that lake view, which you can't beat that. Yeah. And then they've created beers that are great for the lake. And I mean, that was important to them when they were doing that, and they've done it, and it's just really good. So everyone, you do have to go to all of the different breweries, because every single one is a completely different experience.
Yeah. And I like how you said that, they wanted to make lake beers. Well, they're on Lake Gunnersville, I love that it's, they're not just creating beer, but they're like, okay, how can we create a beer, pay homage to our area, give the people what they want, you know, and it's really, I mean, the marketing behind it is amazing as well. I mean, it's equally as amazing as the brewing.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
That's really cool. Yeah. And Goat Island, they have one of my favorite beers as well, the Blood Orange, which I think that they'd probably consider that their flagship beer.
Yeah. And I love Goat Island. It's so crazy too with Goat Island. When I was writing the book, I spent a lot of time in Coleman. And they were just sort of starting when the book was coming out, but they already had figured it out. I mean, they were already doing such amazing stuff. Yeah. And it's crazy that Coleman, Alabama, who had the world's largest dry Oktoberfest, would have a brewery. Like, that's crazy.
It's crazy. I know. We did an episode with Goat Island Brewing, so y'all will have to check that out. It's on there.
But I definitely will.
Yes. Well, let's talk a little bit about Back 40 Beer Company, because Jason Wilson in Gadsden was one of the first ones to jump on this scene.
Yes. He's definitely a pioneer of the beer industry. And he was really involved with getting beer, the whole process of the legislation and everything, you know, making that happen. And I think they started in 2008. So this was before they could have beer on premise. This was before they could have beer over 6%. You know, like, he was starting under the most restrictive laws that he could possibly be starting under. So it's incredible, too, that they have remained open, because a lot of the really, really early ones ended up not necessarily, they didn't continue on. So, and actually, I think Back 40 was the very first local craft beer that I personally had. So I have, they're dear and near to me. So,
yeah. Yeah, and they've got some really interesting names like Naked Pig. And
That was the first one I had. That was the very first. Yeah.
Yeah, that is a good one. And, of course, I love the name Back 40. That it's that nod to, you know, living out in the country on a farm. You know, you talk about, like, the Back 40. You're far from the house, whatever. So that was really
Which is perfect with the history of it being, you know, really agrarian.
Yeah.
Beer was, farmers were drinking and making beer and doing all that. So it was perfectly named.
That is so cool. Well, do you want to tell us what maybe some of your favorite beers are, or do you want to not show favorites here?
So the interesting thing is, when I started, about 2 weeks after I got the book contract, I ended up finding out that I had a wheat intolerance. So beer ended up, which I loved beer, I was writing a whole book about it. but so I ended up not being able to drink beer anymore. And so a lot of the beers, the newer beers, I haven't had the opportunity to have. I'm a really kind of obnoxious when I go to breweries with people, because I always ask to smell their beer. I was like, can I just smell it? Let me just put my face in your beer. I won't drink it. I just want to smell it. So, I personally like really bitter beers. Mm-hmm. So if it tastes like a pine tree, like, I absolutely love it. That's not a lot of people's favorites. But I do like the double IPAs and, you know, all of that. Every brewery, I've literally not gone to a brewery locally that I couldn't find something that I was like, oh, that's amazing. So,
yeah, but there was always something. The irony of writing a beer book and then discovering that you couldn't have it.
That's
so sad.
It was a bummer. It was a bummer.
But yet you're still a huge advocate. So it's like,
and okay. I do feel like it helped me with writing the book, because I couldn't focus. It really was not about the taste or, you know, the beers. It was about the breweries. Yeah. And so it really forced me to focus on the people and the movement and what they were doing for the community. And so it gave me a deeper insight into the craft beer industry as a whole when I couldn't really focus on the beer. Yeah. And I still really love following the craft beer industry.
Yeah.
And so many places, like I said, are doing ciders and meads and cocktails and liquor. It's insane that all of that has come out of 2004 Free the Hops and Right to Brew and several of these advocacy groups that were like, this is gonna, you know, change the state of Alabama. Yeah. And it absolutely did. Even the food truck industry really came out of the craft beer industry because breweries were hiring them to come to their breweries when they couldn't serve food or if they didn't have a kitchen. So a lot has come out of it.
Yeah, that is so cool, though, that you've had other things that have been positives. Because, yeah, now that I think about it, yeah, the food trucks really did pop up out of that. Because, yeah, no, there's a brewery here in Decatur that,
Cross Eyed Owl.
And so they'll have food trucks that come because they don't have a kitchen because there's all kinds of
regulations.
And so that is really cool that we got. Thank goodness we got food trucks.
I know.
We got beer and food trucks from this whole movement. Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. Okay, so before we wrap up, were there any stories that were left on the cutting room floor that did not make the book?
So many stories. I mean, there really were a lot. The one that stands out to me that it just didn't really fit into it, but was a wild story, happened in Florence. And during Prohibition, moonshiners would use children to, it's kind of a horrible story, but would use children to do kind of a lot of their business dealings because they were less likely to go to jail for long periods of time. And so they had this one case where in Florence where moonshiners actually abducted two children and they were having to search for them. And there was newspaper stories of them going from town to town as they were trying to get, you know, people. And a lot of bad things happened during Prohibition just because once you're not regulating the process, then people will do all levels of debauchery in order to further their career. And you don't have tax revenue. So you have a lot of different, you know, bad things that had come out of it. I can't remember if this was in the book, but the other one that is absolutely my favorite is the temperance groups started creating educational books and distributing them to schools. And one of the books said that if you drank too much alcohol in one sitting, you would burst into blue flames. And so I appreciated that one as well. There might that be a little mention of that one in the book, but I did. There was a, like pictures and everything. So I would have put all of that in the book.
Yeah. These are the same people that probably told us that if we ate a watermelon seed that
it will grow.
Yeah, it'll grow in your belly.
And then you'll blow up.
Yeah.
And turn into a blue flame.
Your eyes will stay that way if you cross them for too long. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like all those rules came from the same person. Right?
Yes.
Wow. I'm just going to say it. I think this episode probably has the most shocking stories in it. This has been fantastic.
So I aim to please.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned in the book at the very beginning, you said that this book is woefully incomplete. So any plans to write a follow-up?
I don't. But someone should. I've kind of like do a lot of different types of writing now.
Yeah.
But I definitely believe there could be another much larger book just on Prohibition alone.
Yeah.
So much had to be left out because we kind of pushed the limit for the page number as is. So there's a lot we could have done with it. So.
Okay. Well, cool. This has been awesome. But before we go, we always ask our Facebook followers what questions they wanted asked. And so the winning question, and you've already answered this, but I wanted to kind of highlight it again. Where was the first commercial brewery in North Alabama?
So the first commercial brewery in all of Alabama was Huntsville. So it was okay. North. So we kind of win. And it was 1819, and it was the Badlin brothers, and it was called Huntsville Brewing. And so they had a lot of misfortunes. So they were only open for about 7 years. But there is evidence that they were brewing, and they had a hops field and quite a bit of land that they were doing this process on. So.
Okay, cool. Well, tell our listeners where they can find your book, because you need to buy this, everyone.
So you can get North Alabama Beer from really a lot of different, you can go into Barnes & Noble and places. I believe you can also go to Harrison Hardware, okay, which support local, and get it in there. But it's actually, interestingly, they also sell it at the grocery store. So oh, I wow. saw it at Kroger's the other day, and they have it at Walgreens, which is completely wild to see your book in Walgreens.
That's so cool.
So it is through Arcadia Press or History Press. And so they have a whole series of books and a lot of great books about North Alabama.
Okay. Well, all right. Well, we mentioned that we have a North Alabama craft beer trail, and we've just relaunched our new passport. So you can check in at different places and earn prizes. And it's our breweries, we've got a distillery, there's some other fun things on there as well, but you go to northalabama.org, click places to visit, then click trails, and then you'll find the craft beer trail and you can get your digital passport that way. So thank you so much for being my guest. This was a ton of fun.
Well, thank you for having me. I love talking about beer anytime, all the time. So
yes, thank you. North Alabama's social platforms are linked in the description. Thanks for joining us, and we'll be back next time with more about North Alabama adventures.